There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
What's good, internet? It is January 13th, 2017, and I touched a Nintendo Switch today.
Gross, gross.
Yeah.
Did you wash your hands? Switch.
No.
Oh.
They're grimy. Actually, I'm definitely going to get sick. I like shook so many hands today, and it took way longer than it should have for me to find a disinfectant, like... like a soap. What's the thing I'm thinking of, Danielle?
You're thinking of hand sanitizer?
Hand sanitizer,
I think
you
used mine, actually.
I did.
I was copiously using some, and then I was just like, we had a discussion about the flu. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous.
It happened. We saw a bunch of people, which is great. Like the nice thing about these events is that you get to do your job, which is cool. But then also, which is like, oh wow, hey, you're here from San Francisco. You're here from some other place in the world. Like,
oh, Patrick Klubbock's not here. That's cute.
I wish you had been there, Patrick.
You Why came up you... many times. Everybody
Good.
Missed
Good.
You.
My presence is always known.
Chris Kohler referred to you as young Patrick Klepek.
Yep.
I mean, you know. But for him, and I've known Chris a long time. I will forever be 14-year-old Patrick Klepek in some people's eyes.
That's true. That's true.
Never a dad.
Never, ever a dad.
Not even now.
How are you? How are you, Danielle Riendo and Patrick Klepek?
I mean, I'm good, but Patrick, I want to hear about your day because we're gonna hear all about our day. So. How
I mean, my
doing?
Day. My day was your day without playing the game. So reading. I mean, we can get into it as I think we should start with talking about what you guys actually played as opposed to my observations. But totally. It was interesting to watch the arcs of people's interest in what has happened between last night and today, as I join the chorus of most people who have not actually played any of these things, gotten a hands-on sense of what Nintendo's creating, and is mostly reacting to sort of pure information.
Totally. I definitely think you're right that we could start with, like, hey, here, I touched some stuff, but I actually, there are people out there who listen to us who maybe were not up at 1 a.m. last night writing or reading all about the Switch the way you were, the way we were. So yeah, maybe we should actually start with what we are responding to, which is that last night, Nintendo did their big reveal stream for the release date, the price, some more information about the Nintendo Switch, the new Nintendo console. Do you want to run down the basics of that, Patrick?
Yeah. Can we figure out how we're going to talk what this machine is called? Are we calling it the Switch? Are we calling it Nintendo Switch? Are we calling it the Nintendo Switch?
I like the
Switch.
The
Mighty Switch Force. That's what we're calling it.
That's okay.
It's a great game.
Dave Lightwood.
Nintendo's Switch makes me uncomfortable. I don't like the way that rolls off my tongue.
You don't like Nintendo Switch?
No, Nintendo's Switch, like the possessive.
like Nintendo's holding Mario, holding a Switch.
Yeah, which way? I don't know what goes on in New Donk City. Yeah. Shit gets real out there.
Shit gets real in New Donk City. Let me tell you. Shit, I was out back of Diddy Shop or Diddy Mart the other day, and it was just nuts.
He had his peanut gun out. It was not good.
It was so...
Yeah, last night they
Switch.
Yeah, they gave us the basics, which is it's coming out March 3rd, which is several weeks earlier than people thought. People were thinking it was the rumored dates of middle of March or late March based on when their fiscal year would end. But it's March 3rd in a bunch of territories, including the U.S., Europe, and Japan, and
some countries in Europe. I believe
some countries in Europe. There was a Eurogamer report going around a couple of weeks ago that was saying part of what was holding up Breath of the Wild was localization. It would not shock me if Nintendo refuses to launch in a territory in which they cannot launch Zelda, because we'll get to.
Fair.
There's not that many launch games for this thing.
Well, and as we'll get to, probably, it looks like Zelda is going to be a little more localization intensive than what past Zelda games may have been.
Yes. So
I could see that being a bit of a holdup.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it's $2.99 in March 3rd in a bunch of different territories, and they confirmed a bunch of games, you know, Super Mario Odyssey, which they are calling a proper follow up to Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Sunshine, which is like really exciting. A bunch of games like, you know, Fire Emblem Warriors, a new Shin Megami Tensei game, and then confirming that Zelda is for launch. Like, you can read sort of like the specific breakdown on our site and a lot of other places, but I think the price and the release date and that Zelda is at launch are sort of the key. And then I guess maybe battery life, but even then, like, I think those are sort of the key
battery life. Battery life 2.5 hours to 6 hours is what they're saying, which is variable based on game.
Yeah, it's they are saying 2.5 to 6 hours, and they specifically said that Zelda would be 3 hours. So, you know, unsurprisingly, it's based on the intensity of the game.
Good on them for coming out and saying, like, yeah, here's what Zelda is. Here's the one you care a lot about. Like, okay.
At least they know. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Yeah, I haven't followed all the accessory stuff. I'm just curious, like, if there's any way, like, that is not, 3 hours is not the cross-country flight metric that is sometimes used for judging a handheld. I think three hours is pretty good for most people's commute in the, under the assumption that you can put an AC adapter in your, in your backpack or in your car or something like that, and you can charge it at your work or something like that. My guess is most people's commutes are not more than 3 hours. But
well, it also charges through USB-C, so I think people have been saying, like, oh, you can just use a general USB charger, like, battery pack. Which are apparently like at a place now where that is viable. It's better than you dragging your Wii U onto a plane still, Patrick.
I'm going to miss it though. And you know what? These games aren't backwards compatible. So when I play some Bayonetta 2, bring in that Wii U. That's my new track.
Maybe that'll be one of their classic games on their new subscription online service.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's the other, that was one of the other big things that came out last night, was that for the first time Nintendo will have a pay to use online service, like the way PSN or Xbox Live have been for years now.
It launches free.
Oh, launches free. Okay.
It launches free and then becomes a paid service in the fall.
And there's something else about they're going to get you with that Splatoon 2 in the summer for free. You play that online for free. And then when you want to play whatever comes out in the fall, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 or Mario Odyssey.
That game's
all,
not coming
online
out till like 2020.
Mario Kart.
I know.
Well, there's a Mario Kart version that's also
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Yeah. Yes. So I think there's all sorts of conversations to have about that stuff. But I kind of, like Patrick, I guess I do want to know, Danielle, what were your impressions of like touching a Switch and like.
Well, I think the main thing that. Touching Good. A Switch. I won't go there for once in my life. I think the main impression I had from actually, you know, the physical experience of the Switch was that it feels fantastic and wonderful and high quality. And the hardware itself looks really good. The device itself, the controllers. I have tiny baby hands, so the controllers actually felt amazing to me. I don't know if folks with bigger hands had some issues with, you know, they are pretty small. They are, you know, Each side is a little bit small, but it felt good. It felt high quality. And that HD, what are they calling it? The HD rumble is actually incredible.
Can you feel like, what is it like? Did you shake the ice cubes in your hand?
Yes.
No. So,
well, sort of.
So what we did was we played a bunch of games.
Yeah.
I got there very early this morning. There was a presentation that was pretty boring, and then that they should have just cut and just let us play games. And then I played a bunch of other stuff. But then eventually Danielle joined me, and then we started playing some stuff together, including 1-2 Switch. The
$50 1-2 Switch. Let's point out.
Is it fucking $50?
Yep.
No, it needed to
not
be
to like immediately not to immediately deflate any enthusiasm you have for what is probably a clever collection of a hardware
free.
Showing mini games.
Make that game free, put it in the box. That's the whole thing.
It's really fun, but that $50 is.
Sorry, I should have waited till the end.
$50.
It was really fun. It was really fun.
Oh, wait,
$50 fun, but $15. Really,
yeah, like not 15.
Like
50. GameStop currently listed at $50. So
like
unless that gets changed, well, let's walk us through like,
all right,
like
so
what the games are.
So 1-2 Switch is a collection of mini games that you play with separate Joy-Cons. You have one Switch unit, that sounds bad. And then you each take a Joy-Con, and then there are a bunch of mini games that are like built around using the Joy-Con in different ways, and like a lot of looking each other in the eye and laughing because it's funny to look at your friend in the eye and like get serious. And at the event today, they had 6 mini games. I think we played probably 4 or 5.
There was a quick draw one.
So there was a quick draw one, which went very well for me.
Did not go hard for me.
No, you shot yourself in the foot a lot.
Several times.
You shot the dirt, but the people who were watching you were like, "Girl, you shot yourself in the foot."
Are
you pressing a button or like describe like the actual like actions you're doing with the game?
So the quick draw action is you take the. In the quick draw one, you take the Joy-Con, you put it to your side, then it's like you look each other in the eyes. That's what it says on the screen. So this is one of those games that's running, you're kind of interacting with it through the Joy-Con and through audio. You're not really looking at the screen. There's stuff happening on the screen. If someone was watching you, they would have the joy of looking at the screen and you at the same time.
Okay.
The Joy-Con. And then it goes like ready, steady, draw. And you draw at draw and you lift up and you aim horizontally and then you pull a trigger. Right?
Okay.
It's a quick draw game. And then it makes noises, and then it says, like, okay, then you look at the screen, and it shows on the screen, like, in the milliseconds, who fired first, and then, like, the angle at which you aimed. Because if you don't aim up enough, then you shoot the dirt. Or if you aim too high,
okay,
you miss.
That's pretty smart. That's kind of cool.
And it's pretty fucking cool, especially, like, it's the steely-eyed shit. It's just, like, the, like... Danielle and me looking at each other in the eye.
We're trying to psych each other out by making like stupid faces.
Which eventually happened in another game, and it was good. So what was another one, Danielle? What else did we play?
There was another one that was Milking a Cow. So we sat there.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of photos of that today on Twitter.
Oh yeah, it was pretty good. I think somebody actually had us on a Periscope when we were doing this one. But in that one,
we got an audience.
Yeah, there was
like
a whole audience.
And cheering.
It was amazing. And the two folks who were demoing it for us were very, very amusing. And
well, and that's the thing that's
time, which helped.
That's the thing that makes me wish it was a free pack-in, is that like it would be so easy for me to see a drinking game built around this stuff. Like parties where people are laughing and joking about, you know, if you get shot, then do a lap. You know what I mean? Like that sort of like goofy, funny dorm room shit would do very well, but not for $50. Anyway, I'm sorry. Tell me about
milk. It's okay.
The name of that mini game is literally Milk. That's my last note.
It's called Milk. We had to put on cow hats that were like very special, you know, hats that had cows and udders and stuff. And you are physically, you have the controller. Again, you're sort of holding it horizontally, and there are multiple kind of buttons on the sides, and you had to sort of like go down them in a milking motion.
Uh-huh.
And of course, there's, you know, cow noises responding to you, and you're kind of milking
and
with the other
squeezing,
person.
You're squeezing, so there are, the
Joy-Cons
have...
You squeeze the top, and you squeeze the bottom. Basically.
Right, there are two buttons. There's an L and an R button, right, on the top of the Joy-Cons. And so you hit those in succession and pull down, and that was the first time, I guess, we actually felt the HD rumble, right?
Yeah, yep. Which is a beautiful feeling.
What was that?
Like, what does that mean, though? Like, what does it mean? What does HD like?
It
describe?
Actually feels like there's weight in your hands. Okay. It actually feels like the controller is responding to you. It's not just like a rumble. It feels as if something is happening in different parts of the controller at different times. There's,
so
there's
like exert pressure, different measures of pressure in different areas.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so then we played the one that was the most like that, which is one where you hold the Joy-Con in your hand, right, like flat, and then you move it back and forth, like I'm doing with my phone on the camera for people who are watching live on Twitch, twitch.tv/waypoint, and you have to feel how many, like, steel balls are in the box you're holding, basically, by rolling it around and feeling it out. And that was the first time that I was like, oh, shit, like, yeah, okay, that feels like I'm holding a box with some steel balls in there.
It's
a gimmick. It's cheap. I'm sure it's expensive. I'm sure people work really hard to make it work. But, like, it works. And, like, despite the fact that I can be like, oh, like, I can't imagine quickly a good use for this in a larger game, that effect was still really neat and cool.
Yeah, it was really rad. And we also played a samurai game, which one went really well for me. Unlike the cowboy game. I'm a much better samurai than cowboy, I guess.
It's a cool game because, like, so the cowboy game, you do the quick draw and then you're done, right? You're like, oh, quick draw, got you, let's go again. In the samurai one, it goes back and forth until someone loses. And so in that one, there's someone who says, like, you know, take your stance, go, or strike. And one person has the samurai sword, like, above their head, the katana above their head in the stance. And then the other person has their hands up in, like, a defense stance. And they have to clap to catch the samurai sword, the katana, as the other player comes in with it. And so that's, like, eyesight and body language. And we went back and forth, like, 4 or 5 times where we kept catching the other person's thing.
Really good.
And then finally, Danielle fucking just broke my ankles. She was just like, she did the thing and I clapped. And then there was this moment of recognition that I'd fucked up. And she was like, got you. And just like, stab. It was like so good.
That was really
fun. That stuff, you can see we're getting excited while we had a good time with that stuff. I wish it wasn't $50.
As soon as I saw that, it gives me a lot of uncomfortable feelings about a lot of the business decisions that Nintendo might be making surrounding the Switch. Because, I mean, it's just, if Wii Sports had been a separate disc, which it was, I believe, in Japan. Like, I believe the pack-in for Wii Sports was outside of Japan, and Wii was certainly a success in its native territory. But, like, part of the reason it was propelled was because that it was just there. Like,
yeah.
It was a Wii Sports machine for a lot of people that weren't into playing games like Twilight Princess and Zack and Wiki and some of the other cool games that were released for that machine. I just can't wrap my head around that thing being $50. Like, I'm not going to be surprised if they respond to this by lowering the price, but the way they should respond to this is, like, refunding everyone's money and making that, if nothing else, a free download that comes with, like, signing up for your Nintendo account. Like, it's just, it's, you want people to experience, like, they spent all this time building these clever little games that most people are now not going to use.
Like, and understand that nothing else I saw there basically used the HD Rumble in a way that was meaningful. I saw this really briefly. I played another game called Has Been Heroes, which used the Rumble to communicate a couple of different things effectively. That's a game that's, like, the cheap, like, lazy description of it is, like, what if Darkest Dungeon met Plants vs. Zombies?
Frozen Byte, the guys, the team that did the Trine games.
Yeah.
That makes, really? Huh. That's interesting. I can see that. So that's a game where basically you're, like, going from, like, room to room, Darkest Dungeon style. It's a roguelike. And you have enemies coming in from the right in lanes, and you're kind of manipulating strategically the placement of your characters to do attacks. And then the thing that's really cool about it is that it's not just like you're sitting in your lane shooting or attacking. It's that you have to kind of send them out on like an active time battle system where, like, every 10 seconds they can attack again to go out, hit an enemy a couple of times. And then the game kind of pauses and you can switch lanes at that point. You can switch into an empty lane when no one is there because they're out attacking. And so you end up doing these really cool combos of moving people around. That's a game that I'm afraid people will miss. Or the other way to maybe the glass half full side of that is there aren't that many games coming out for the Switch early on. And so maybe it will be one of those games that finds an audience because it doesn't have that much competition on the platform.
And it's $20.
And it's $20. And it's listen, it's $20 for like a repeatable roguelike game with some character. And so I'm really curious to see how that comes out in the end.
I think my other favorite game was also a $20 game. So there's a
yes.
there's a transition for you. It was called Clipper Snippers.
Nope.
Snipper Clippers.
No, still wrong.
Snippers and Clippers.
Snippers and Clippers, still not right.
Damn it.
I think it's Snipper Clips.
Snipper Clips.
Or Clipper Snips. Snipper Clips.
Snipper Clips.
Snipper Clips.
How
do you... you describe Snipper Clips.
Okay. It's a really cool 2D puzzle game. Where you are cooperatively playing with another person, and you have two sort of 2D characters. They're both in a sort of oval kind of patterns. You walk around, and if you overlap with them, you can press a button to actually cut out the shape that you are. So you make, you're basically making different shapes with another person. You're sort of figuring out what the puzzle needs from you, what it's sort of asking of you shape-wise. Figure out how to sort of cut out, clip out, whatever, snipper, clip out that proper shape, and then sort of make that happen. So there was one example, sort of an early example, where we had to figure out how to get into a very sharp shape to hit a pencil eraser, and that was like the end of that level. Things got a little more elaborate as we went on. It was just a really cleverly sort of well-designed, you know, kind of 2D puzzle game where the fun is figuring it out together. You know,
yeah, exactly. So it's, we played two players. My understanding is it goes up to four players. We also played that, again, awesome. Just with the Joy-Cons, with the screen of the device, with the kind of the tablet Switch mode. And that was, that. Here's the thing I'll say about that is I forgot I was playing that on the tablet, right? Now, obviously, they have a presentation set up so that you can be at the exact right distance of that. You know what I mean? Like, that might not be, but, you know, it was just
sitting
on the table
at a table,
in front of us.
Basically, you know, kind of thing.
And,
yeah.
And so, like, the fact that in the middle of playing that game, I forgot that I was just playing it on a tablet is a really good sign. Because that didn't get in the way. And when something disappears, when a piece of technology disappears from your life, that's when you know that it's successful. I don't go around all day thinking I'm wearing glasses, which is a sign that glasses are successfully designed. And so, like, that's how this felt, which is maybe the nicest thing I can say about the Switch. And that game was just also good. Like, the Snipper Clippers... Fuck. Snipper Clips. is a game that I recommended to everybody I saw at that event. Like when I saw, I guess Chris Kohler had already played it by then, but when I saw people from Polygon, when I saw people from Kotaku, when I saw people from Giant Bomb, I was like, hey, Snipper Clips. Get on this Snipper Clips thing. This is actually really fun. So I have no idea how long that game is. Again, there are like five levels in our demo. Five little like puzzles. I hope it's really long. The music is really good. It's
a nice style to it too. That sort of like very pretty, like fun color, you know, crayon-y kind of style, which I always like that.
Totally.
And it's set on like graph paper. It's just, there's a lot of really smart little design decisions already apparent, even in just a short demo. So yeah, really, really cool. And that was the sort of like, you know, the $20 game that sold me hard on what this can be for, you know, for bright designers kind of putting something together.
Is Nintendo making that game?
Yes, that's a Nintendo game. Yeah. Okay. That's a Nintendo game. There's a lot of Nintendo. Like, so in general, and we'll get back to like the specifics of what we played in a moment, but like, it was a mix of first and third party stuff. There was not too much from third party that was super exciting, which I think is the story of the Nintendo Switch, which is the story of Nintendo for the last decade, right?
You know, post Capcom 5 for the GameCube, a reference a few people may pick up on, but was the last time there was sort of significant third party support. One of those Capcom 5 didn't even ship. Come on, that game with the Griffin looked pretty
cool. Right. God. So, you know, I wish I had the list in front of me. Danielle, do you have the list of things?
I have the list of our what we can say. And not what we can say. But they actually were very great about that.
I'm also collecting questions in the chat.
Of course, we need to discuss ARMS. We played ARMS.
Sure. ARMS is... you're the one with the boxing history. You tell us what ARMS is, Daniel.
Well, ARMS is ostensibly a boxing and shooting game. A very, like, it's almost a, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, but with a little bit more of a Splatoon kind of style, that very vibrant and fun sort of, you know, arena kind of style. You know, it's two player versus, and, you know, you have your two arms, you're holding your Switch, your Joy-Cons together. You're using them to punch, and you're also using them to move. So you move by sort of tilting one way or the other. You're dashing by using sort of one trigger, and you're punching by either or. And I kept messing up because I was doing like actual crossing, and you have to do things differently than you would in an actual boxing match. But I can definitely see the potential there. There is certainly some depth there in terms of movement, in terms of sort of when to block and sort of when to dodge and when to, you know, use your special attack, your sort of overpowered special attack.
Is there a price on that game, Patrick?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if this should be a $50.
No, it shouldn't. Look. I had a, I had a, I came into it, I did not like the first like 2.5 matches that we had. It was kind of like really squirrely. The punches, I wasn't having problems hitting the punches. Like, I wasn't having problems landing hits, but I was having a problem moving in a way that felt tactical. It's just all these dodges and blocks and special moves that your character, that each of the different characters has access to. The ninja, when he blocks, can teleport away. The mecha lady can hover in place.
$60.
It's $60 game. Is there like, what? I don't know, man.
Sorry.
It's like, cool.
I'm taking the rug out from like all of this enthusiasm because of the... And maybe these things could change. These are... I don't know if these are official price points or temporary. No, they must be official because Switch is listed at 50 and this is listed at 60 and it seems unlikely they would list those differently if that
was... A six and then a zero dollars.
I mean, you wonder... like a game like Splatoon had like a surprisingly robust and excellent single player campaign that almost no one talked about or appreciated as much as they should.
Yeah, but it
was overshadowed by the fact that the multiplayer stuff was as tremendous as it was. So
yeah.
I guess I would be hopeful that a game like ARMS, which I think is coming out in the spring, it's not a launch game, would have maybe more to it. But yeah, these like that game comes across as something that's like a $20 or like $10 downloadable game, not a $60.
Part of Wii Sports 2 or something.
Totally. Or is bundle this also with the 1-2 Switch.
I mean, again, we don't know. I didn't ask about a campaign.
$120 to get ARMS and 1-2 Switch.
That's that is an amazing thing you just said out loud. Like, oh, I've dumped $300 on this new console, and now I'm going to get ARMS and 1-2 Switch for a third of that price, for a little more than a third of that price.
Yeah, it's...
Fuck.
Yeah.
Somehow Bomberman is $60 too.
Bomberman has a story mode that I didn't play. They did offer me to play the story mode in that, but I wanted to go play some other stuff.
Sure.
And I had an okay time with Bomberman. That was... It exists.
I saw a screenshot that was isometric. Is there a top down in that game?
I have to look at...
So you didn't play it?
I did. I played it, but in
was
my
it
head...
Was it isometric or was it top-down?
I think it was isometric. I remember seeing the front of like, blocks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it wasn't... It didn't get... I'm not... Super Bomberman. Switch. Oh, it wasn't, like, this isometric. I think there must be a less isometric mode than what I'm looking at.
Yeah. All right.
I think. Like, there was just a straight-up competitive mode that was fine. So the thing I noticed about that actually was that was the moment that I realized that the Joy-Cons are kind of weird because one of them has the analog stick in the middle, right? Because the analog sticks aren't, those two sides of the Joy-Con aren't symmetrical. So it's not like the analog stick is all the way over to the left on both of them. On one of them, they're like, it's like both buttons are squished together on the right side of the screen or right side of the controller, which is a little weird. It never got in the way, but it was a thing I noticed. So, like, again, it didn't disappear from sight, so to speak. What else?
How was the Sonic game? I didn't get to play it. When I came in, you
Sonic
were actually
Mania,
playing it. Mania.
There was nothing new from the Sonic Mania demo, as far as I know, since previous Sonic Mania demos. But it was the first time I got to play it. That game looks cool. Like, I'm not, like, a diehard Sonic fan. I have watched every Sonic game ever being completed twice because my life is strange. But shout outs to Run Button. But nice. that game seems like a cool one of those. Like I'm more interested in that than anything that came out of like the Sonic 4 project where they were trying to update it with like HD graphics but still do a 2D style. Like just go back and make a dope sprite based Sonic game, please. And it does. And there's some cool stuff in there. But again, people have covered that game elsewhere. There's a lot of great coverage of that out there.
Sure.
I'm gonna grab some questions. Right. Josh Valiant asks, "What about the sound quality of the undocked console? Did you get a handle on that, or I guess then it's run that out? Like, did you get to experience, pulling it off of the dock and playing it as a handheld? How does that experience change?
I played Zelda off the dock. So the first thing I did, I mean, like, this is the first time I think I've ever been guilty of this, but it was like, all right, everybody, you can go into the thing now. They kind of broke us up into groups and then led us into various like sectors of this space to play games. I was like, all right, but I'm going to fast walk past all of you to Zelda. And I like, did that thing. I was like, hey, yeah, no, good seeing you. Yep, talk to you later, Jeff Bacalar. And then just like, zip, controller, sit down, Zelda. And that was like a 20-minute demo. That was like the first 20 minutes of the game, or the 20-minute demo, basically, that was at E3. But the, you know, you open it up playing it just with the joypad, whatever the thing is, where it's like the weird block and the joypad, the Joy-Cons are attached to it. And then like halfway through
the demo,
I guess,
call it the handheld.
The handheld. That's a bad name for it. I know. That sounds like it's a thing.
Undocked. So, yeah. That also makes me feel also weird.
No. So you remove the Joy-Cons from that thing and you clip them on and you pull it out, and all of that does feel as good as you hope it does. I'm just like, oh, cool. I clipped it in and then lifted it out and it just works. Like, there's no extra button I have to hit.
There's no syncing.
No. Not well, when you put it back in, it says like synced or something like that, but it doesn't.
But you're not like just, wait, you know, it's not like you're on a Mac laptop watching like a little rainbow ball like swirl around.
Not at all, thankfully. There is, I didn't have a great time pulling the Joy-Cons off of that block thing, that like the handheld. There's like a button you hit to release those from that, and that was a little wonky at first, but I'm sure I'd get used to it. And then like holding the device was the first time when I was like, they're gonna sell some of these, because it feels good to hold.
Yeah.
Like, you walk into a Best Buy and you pick this thing up and you're like, this feels good to hold.
How
and
heavy? Like, what is the weight?
So there's two answers here. First answer is pretty heavy, like in a good way, in the way that you want a tablet to feel heavy.
Like, not meaty, as like opposed meaty to heavy.
Right, right. So that it, you know, it doesn't feel chintzy. It doesn't feel like it's about to fall apart. That said, everything was on lockdown, right? Which means it all has those metal brackets that Nintendo puts on all of their stuff. All when, like, if you ever get like a capture kit sent to you, you'll see that like
everything is literally screwed into tables. Like, they're not, there's not just wires that are kind of locked in. Like, they literally screw things into the table. Like, I remember when they installed capture kits at Giant Bomb for DS and Wii U, like, and, you know, a person from Nintendo comes in and says, can I screw this into this table? And it's like,
yeah. You know, we can do this with everything else and it's not a big deal, right? Anyway, so there are these like metal.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Plates on the back of the units we tried, so I wouldn't be so shocked if when these release they're a little bit lighter than what we felt today. But at the same time, I'm not saying that that's definitely the case. It was like this weird middle zone of like, maybe there's a little bit of added weight from this, but fundamentally it feels like it's a chunky good feeling to hold it and pick it up, but not so heavy that I would like my arms would get tired holding it in a subway train or something like that. And as to the sound quality, unfortunately, we were playing at a big event, and so there was just lots of floor noise.
Yeah.
It's super loud. I wish I had put headphones in to just try it. And then I also did the thing of like putting the Switch back into its dock, leaving the Joy-Cons out, and played Zelda with just the two Joy-Cons.
I heard that's kind of uncomfortable.
The Joy-Con. I actually, like, my natural position was just like, oh, this is okay. I wouldn't play that whole game. I'm going to play that game with a pro controller. But it for like the airplane where you have it up on the thing, totally doable, I think.
That makes me so excited. Like, the idea of being able to play like a Super Mario Odyssey like on a plane. Totally. Like, oh my God. Like,
maybe I'm weird and built to hold two separate controllers and that not fuck with my head, but it totally worked for me. I could imagine. So there was the one thing that didn't was that game has on gyroscopic aiming for the bow by default.
Oh, come on.
You can turn it off.
Off by default, son.
It's on by default. Also, they have jump on the Y button and sprint on the B button.
Yeah.
And the only option to remapping that is to flip them. And it's like, I know, I want to hit run and jump. I want to run and then jump.
Run
and those
with
buttons,
this part of your thumb, and then you jump with that part of your thumb. It's been Nintendo since 1985.
That's what, but this doesn't do that. It doesn't do it. It does.
I know. I know. I'm there.
Anyway, I like the separate. They it totally worked. The gyroscope doesn't, but who cares?
Yeah.
Just use it like regular, and that pretty much worked. So yeah, that was my Zelda experience. Danielle also played really quick. I just want to touch on this because we started to talk about this a little bit. Like, how do you feel about Zelda? I played that intro 20 minutes and then I played it again and just didn't and fucked off a second time.
Totally.
But what was your opinion from playing it?
I'm both really excited about it and a little nervous because for me, like as a Zelda fan and as a, you know, I've sort of only started playing Zelda games with the 3D Zelda games. It's just not something I was exposed to before that time, but love them and I think they're great and I think they're well designed and I think what they do better than really almost any other game of its type is that they kind of put you in this like perfect flow state. Like the best levels of those games, the best dungeons have you constantly doing different activities that are interesting and fun. Like you're solving a puzzle, then right into combat, then right into exploration, then right into something else. Like they feel so good and so focused towards putting you in that state of like, I am in ideal adventure mode, that I'm legitimately a little worried that having an open world will break that up somehow. Like there are only a couple of open world games that I think have put me in that state. And it's pretty much like Witcher 3. Like, I don't think a lot of open world games are super well sort of equipped to put you in that like absolute flow state of I'm doing this, and this, and I'm never bored and I'm always interested in kind of what I'm doing. So that's my worry.
I'm pretty confident in Nintendo's ability to do that because part of the reason I think CD Projekt Red was able to pull off what they did with The Witcher 3 is that they did the opposite of what Bethesda has been trying to do for the last 10 years. So Bethesda started with big worlds and like systemic systems that interact with each other and then started finding ways to fill that with meaningful content. Mm-hmm. Like they did they got the open world part down before they got like the really compelling stories and combat and things they've been working on in some recent games. Whereas like CD Projekt Red like has had stories and things to do and all that stuff nailed and then just started learning how to build an open world. And so I have some confidence that Nintendo should be able to pull this off, and I'm hoping they can pull it off because, like CD Projekt Red, they've been very good at all that other stuff, and now they're broadening it out into an open world, so hopefully that would just be a more that's always been kind of my problem with some of these Bethesda games, is like I just get kind of like I haven't enjoyed what I'm doing in the world as much as I appreciate the world, and so I'm hoping Nintendo can do the same thing CD Projekt Red did, was like, yo, we're really good at this stuff, and now we're just going to drop this, kind of like Metal Gear Solid did, like drop this into like a broader context. Because Metal Gear did it really successfully, and I'm hoping Zelda can kind of pull off the same sort of thing.
I hope so, certainly. I definitely hope so. I mean, the game looks beautiful. It feels good to play. Like, it you know, I have a lot of hope. I just, it's always going to be an underlying
about the story.
The story looks really cool. It's like,
there's voice acting.
That game, that trailer that they released last night, where they were like, the history of the royal family of Hyrule is the history of the Calamity Ganondorf or whatever. And it was like, yeah, okay. Or not even the Calamity Ganon. It was
Calamity
of
Ganon.
Calamity Ganon. I'm like, yes, this is my entire shit. Let's go. Like, old ruins, like Miyazaki-esque, like, just like, so good. Well,
it seems like maybe for the first time, Nintendo has sort of avoided lore.
Yes.
As a thing, and have like slowly backed their way into it. Like, they never had to establish like timelines for Zelda and things like that. They just chose to do that at a certain point in a sort of retcon-y sort of way, but enough that it, you know, if you kind of squint your eyes, it works. And it seems like with this game, like in some ways, it feels like the Zelda, you know, like, you know, a game that's sort of going to tie a lot of things together in a way that Nintendo doesn't make games like this, and if they really are going to go in this direction they seem to be kind of hinting at, I'm genuinely curious to see what kind of, I mean, you know, like that scene in the trailer where, you know, Zelda is like sobbing. It's like, oh, okay. Like,
wow.
All right.
Okay.
Like, they're going to go for it, I guess. But I don't know what going for it means, because going for it also means like sending Mario, who is a human, to New Donk City where there are other humans. And so I just don't even know what they're doing right now.
Well, let's come back to New Donk City.
Okay. We're always in New Donk City.
Okay. Renopolis says Zelda just needs robots now. That game has robots in it. Like, that trailer had a big mech climbing or building like a mountain or some shit. Two more things on that. So just to like get back to the previous conversation about the way that Nintendo can, or, you know, the kind of like concern over will they lose the focus of the previous tightly designed Zelda games. One is like, some of those games were not as tightly designed as possible. Like,
for sure. Twilight Princess in particular.
And then Skyward Sword was... I heard somebody tell me about the end of Skyward Sword once in like the last 20 hours or whatever, and just like, I'm never playing that game. I'm not going to.
The last dungeon was the best dungeon, but unfortunately it was buried. There is a 20-hour great game in Skyward Sword. Unfortunately, right. It was locked away in like a 35-hour game.
Right. So... my actual hope here is, or the thing that's most interesting to me is, I love it when Nintendo sees some stuff that's happening in games and goes like, "Huh, how do we do that in a different, in a Nintendo-like manner?" Right? And you saw that last year or 2 years ago now with Splatoon and the shooter. You see that with I want to keep wanting to say Olimar. What is the
Pikmin.
Game with Olimar? Pikmin and like games. The RTS.
Mm-hmm.
And here it looks like what they're saying is like, huh, open world games, survival games, right? Mm-hmm. Don't forget that like Link has a cult, like a temperature meter and some other stuff. All sorts of like systemic driven interaction stuff. A little Far Cry 2 in there.
Oh yeah.
A little Dragon's Dogma.
There's stealth in this game too.
There's stealth in this. So like that was the moment for me of like thinking about what you had said, because you and I had that talk a little bit about the tightness of previous Zelda games. And then we went back and I played a second session. You played something called and kind of got some footage. And there's a moment when I was playing where it was just like, I'm just like going around and exploring and looking for stuff and like shooting at squirrels and collecting acorns and fruit and like looking off cliff faces and be like, wow, this looks really good. And then I turned and it was like huge, like prairie almost, right? Just like grass swaying in the wind. And there's nothing tightly designed about that. There's nothing that is about establishing a flow state of thoughtful, of tactical play, of like decision making. But instead, games like this, when done well, evoke a different sort of flow state in me that isn't about making optimal decisions, but are about making decisions, like aesthetic decisions. And it's like, I'm just gonna slow, you know, they're shutting down this whole event around me. We only have 5 minutes left, but this is gorgeous. I'm going to slowly walk through this meadow because it feels good. And when a game can get me to do something like that, I'm like, all right, that helps. And then a big stone creature, like a big stone cyclops, pulled itself out from the ground, and I ended up like Dragon's Dogma-ing / Shadow of the Colossus-ing up its back to hit it in its weak spot. And that was like, yeah, okay, like I want to play a lot of this game. And that's a good thing because that system doesn't have much else at launch.
Yeah, it's true. I wanted to say one quick thing about the trailer. I thought it looked beautiful, but I do truly hope they don't do like, so it seemed like they were super damseling Zelda again. It was like, no, can't she have a sword too? Can't she be a cool adventurer? I'm going to play the shit out of this game kind of no matter what. But, and like, I will give the game its due. You know, I'm not going to say like, oh, you know, just because of this trailer that looked kind of crappy. But man, do I hope they, you know, it felt like they were kind of going along a path with Tetra and, you know, maybe Sheik. And then sort of, I just don't want them to... I don't want them to go backwards on that.
There are some shots with Zelda in the tunic, like in the same clothing as Link. And there was definitely a moment where I really wanted the camera to pan back behind her and be like, oh, wow, it's in third person and you're Zelda now.
Yeah.
And my hope is that they do something there. But there was just one too many, like, you have to save my daughter, Link.
Right. You're like, okay. And then with the crying, it was like, it's cool that they're getting emotional. It's cool that people care about things. But it was like a little like... oh, Lifetime original, you know, kind of pose going on there a little bit.
So. I think that's a really difficult, I'm not a woman, I can't speak for women. I am echoing women in my life who want there to be room for women who cry, who are also strong women, and that those two things don't clash. But it's so hard to know if they'll execute on that notion here.
For sure.
It's 6-7 weeks. We'll know, right? We'll be playing this game.
We'll know soon.
That is so close.
It's so close.
It's so close.
It's during GDC.
I know. We'll have to figure out what we're doing. I I wish it wasn't during GDC.
I know.
I wish like 2 days ago we weren't like, oh, let's figure out how to do GDC this year. Yep. And then like, oh, right. Oh, right. Switch.
And then here it cool. is.
What's, we'll be switching. What else did we, let's touch maybe one or two other things we played.
And did then, you play that racing game? RX Mario. Something? Not
I
Mario
didn't see
Kart,
that anywhere.
Right? It was right at the beginning somewhere. Okay. I haven't heard much about it. That's why I'm like, what was that about? Fast RMX, that's the name of it.
Didn't see that.
No, anything about it. Just,
played Street Fighter. The D-pad on the Joy-Con is bad because it's not a D-pad. Okay, actually, I didn't play that with a D-pad. I played that with a Pro Controller. Did not love the Pro Controller D-pad either. I couldn't get a flash kick going with Guile. But, yeah, but I really don't like the D-pad on the Joy-Con because it isn't a D-pad. It's buttons, right? It's four buttons that count as, excuse me, as the D-pad. Anything else? I think that might be... Everything,
yeah, that's most of what I played.
Splatoon 2 is more Splatoon. I wish they had had off the gyro controls or let us turn those off to test out if that felt better.
Ugh, gross. Really? They have them flipped on there too? Stop it.
I know.
They might have just inverted the controls too, like a bunch of monsters.
It was
inverted
rough.
Inverted is the only way to play.
Patrick, do you want to talk about Super Mario Donk?
Oh.
Super Mario Odyssey.
Mario Kong Country.
I don't know what to make of it. I don't like that.
The best joke I
watched
saw last
like
night,
three different times. I don't know what to do.
Super Mario 2006 is my favorite.
Oh, yep. The thing is, Sonic Adventure did that shit too. Like even before the really bad Sonic games, the like decent Dreamcast Sonic games.
The
also
president
had the
calls
weird
Sonic
normal humans. Yeah.
In one of the Sonic Adventure games, the president
Sonic is not. Yeah. It doesn't like is Mario human.
Did you read? Can I read? Can I read from the good book of
yeah, the good book.
This
please.
Is the good book of Doc Future. Do you know who Doc Future is?
No. Nope.
Doc Future is an internet comedian at Topher Florence on the internet who he's done great videos. I think he's working on the Barkley game. The second Barkley Shut Up and Jam guy.
I forgot that game existed.
A game exists. He writes. Okay. Mario is nominally Italian. At some point, he had an Italian family, theoretically from planet Earth. Mm-hmm. In Yoshi's Island, it is pretty clear that he's at least genetically Mushroomian. And in Super Mario Odyssey, we see him interacting with people of actual human proportions who, one has to assume, do not have his incredible gymnastic abilities and super strength powerful enough to punch a manhole cover like a goddamn Ninja Turtle. We essentially confirm his alien blood. Now, New Donk City does not necessarily even appear to be on Earth, and it is perhaps an entire dimension / planet of its own. So, is this the actual Earth that Mario was from? Is that the reason he does not speak actual Italian? Perhaps, as New Donk City is to New York, there is also an Italy counterpart to this universe, in this universe, where they speak whatever vile Donktalian tongue comes out of the Mario brothers' mouths. This interdimensional travel would also explain how Mario heard about Peach and just went over to the Mushroom Kingdom in Super Mario Brothers. Also consider that the filthy sewers from which he burst forth may also be the sewers from the original Mario Brothers. Also, why did that dude lay on the couch for a second? What the hell? Anyway, if you look at the timeline from Mario 64 as... And then it cuts off. I think that's a weird-ass trailer.
I think
here's
that
the
game,
thing. Okay.
Oh, all
if
right.
Cut out,
Patrick.
If you cut out all the New Donk City stuff.
No.
That game, I'm just saying, because we don't know, it's hard for me to judge what any of that stuff is, because
Bowser was a gangster. Bowser was dressed
like,
King of New York.
Bowser was not even just your run-of-the-mill gangster, he was definitely a pimp.
But everything else looks, I mean, it looks incredible, it looks weird, and that makes me happy. It looks weird.
Yes. I mean,
it does not look like any sort of conventional follow-up. Like, the idea that they're going for a sort of, like, a more sprawling open world is exciting. Like, it seems like they're, like, a lot of other Japanese, like, Nintendo has not really gotten into the open world game, and now, you know, it's taken 10 years,
and
like,
here
13
they are.
Assassin's Creed later, you know, Nintendo's finally like, all right, we'll give it a shot, and I'm curious to see, like, what they are going to take from Western open world game design and like how that applies to a game like Mario. We're about to see it with Zelda, theoretically later this year, although probably summer 2018. We'll see what happens in Super Mario Odyssey.
So that's the thing, two things there. One, what you just said is like my thesis statement on why I'm kind of excited for the Switch, despite it not having many games at launch, is like, I like it when Nintendo does something different.
Yeah.
I like it when Nintendo throws caution to the wind and is risky Nintendo instead of conservative Nintendo. And this feels like risky Nintendo. And it feels like fun Nintendo and corny Nintendo in the way that corniness can sometimes be charming. Like last night's presentation was like filled with bad costumes and high style and like goofy skits. And a guy wearing a white lab coat acting like he was a squid doctor. Like it
was goofy. It was a bad presentation to explain your new hardware product, but it was very endearing.
It was deeply endearing. Absolutely. Yeah. And so there was a moment today when I realized, like, what would I rather Nintendo be doing? And I guess there's a world in which I would rather them be courting third-party developers, but like I already have a ton of third-party games.
I don't care. I want them to make whatever sell-out mobile shit you gotta make so you could just keep being weird.
That's right.
But even when they do that, they make Super Mario Run, one of my favorite games from last year, and make it classy as shit.
They make it classy as shit. So that's the thing. This might not be a success for them, though I also kind of feel like it might be a huge success for them because people who play games like buying new toys, and the Scorpio and the PS4 are cool, but they are not new toys. They are not like a new thing, and I think the culture might be ready for a new thing. And then also just the second part of the thing that you were saying is that like if Mario does come out this year, if Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Odyssey, hits by holiday 2017, and there have been reports, Patrick is praying now, people listening on the podcast.
I pray to New Donk, the gods of New Donk City.
The New Donks, yes.
To the New Donks, yep. Jack Kirby's New Donks.
Yep.
It's a hot comics joke. If that happens, then this year is Zelda, Splatoon 2, Mario.
I bet they have a lot more. The thing, what doesn't line up with the announcements last night and what we had seen today is it doesn't line up with the output of Nintendo in the last 2 years. Like, there has to be more. Now, granted, I in my mind, This is part of the Nintendo cycle every time they announce a new hardware product, which is like, oh, this is the one where they're going to figure out how to make games at a faster pace and not, you know, run into this issue where, like, there is only a great new game every 18 months. No. I don't think that's going to happen this time.
People in the chat are,
like there's too much waiting in the wings and that they could probably have a really monstrous E3 if they choose, or what may be more likely is you get, like, one or two big things out of E3, and then it just the Nintendo Directs are about to start up again, where they just start trying to dominate people's attention and the news cycle,
right.
You know, once a month, you know, going forward, which is what I hope.
That would be incredible. People in the chat are saying Xenoblade 2 is supposedly this year. Xenoblade 2, guys.
No way. Guys. No way.
I love you. I love you and your optimism in this our dark future. Sidebar, we have to record a politics podcast seconds after we finish this.
Yep.
And that's just going to be a fun swing in emotions. But like,
kind of low.
Xenoblade 2 isn't going to come this year. Like,
maybe in Japan. Maybe holiday in Japan.
I have zero confidence it comes out this year. December 31st in Japan. Right. Maybe we're completely wrong and they actually are on their game and they'll turn out Xenoblade 2 in December or something. But like, there's just no way. Any other questions, Patrick or Danielle?
I want to note that considering the week that I think we've all had in America, considering all the fucking horrible apocalyptic shit, I was so down for the doofy, endearing sort of stuff last night and very down to play the kinds of games that Nintendo makes today.
Right.
So I will say that. As, you know, somebody who both rolls their eyes at a lot of Nintendo's sort of business practices and also really loves a lot of Nintendo games, as I think a lot of us do. So there's some of that in this. I think there's some of that in the optimism I have for this system right now and for some of these games right now that I'm just like, really needed something light. I really needed something kind of like positive and colorful right now. So it, we'll see where we are in a couple of months. So
we will.
Nintendo makes me angry in a way that I love.
Yes.
And that's
sure.
It's part of what I find them to be so endearing as a company is that I think part of the reason people get so passionate / angry, frustrated at them is because so many people desperately want and I think need them to succeed as a company for what they offer.
Right.
And I'm not to say that in some other timeline or, you know, 5 years from now, if they find themselves producing games for other platforms, I think they'll continue to find success. But I want them to continue existing in their own world.
Me too.
Even if they, you know, we look at what they're doing with online services, and we really don't even have time to get into it today. And maybe we can get into it next week. Some of the frustrating things they're doing there, where they just don't quite seem to understand what people are looking for. Maybe they're holding things back.
Well, let's hit the basics. Can we hit the basics on that really quick?
Yeah. So they're doing a paid service that starts in the fall. You know, one of the things they announced was that there will be a free NES or SNES game each month that is offered up, and they're going to modify them to have online play.
Mm-hmm.
But that game does not stay in your library the following month. You then have to purchase it in order to keep it, which is different than how other services handle your quote-unquote free games.
Yeah.
And
that's not great.
Yeah.
Well, it's look, like there's a world where actually it is great. Where
tell me what that world is, convince
that
me.
World is, that is world where it's like Nintendo's video game book club, in which they say, look, it's Super Mario World Month. We're offering it here this month. You get to play it for a month. And also, like, here are, like, a video documentary we put together to, like, explain what's amazing about this game. Like, we've added achievements. Like if there's a way where, like, they celebrate what that game is and make it an event. So it's not just a free game in the way that when the new Xbox Live Gold games are announced, when the PlayStation Plus games are announced, the first thing that happens is people going like, it's not the game I wanted this month. Like, Nintendo has the richest history of video games to tap into.
Yeah.
And if they could turn that, like, I would be fine if it was like, it's Super Metroid month. And like, here's a rare new interview with the, you know, the composer. Like, there's some way to package it as like it was DVD extras around this game where you learned more about it. And at the end they say, all right, well, that's it for the month. If you'd like to keep playing Super Metroid, go ahead and buy it. And, like, you know what? Like, if I'm paying $5 a month, like, I got my $5 out of that. Like, I don't need to own Super Metroid on Virtual Console. Like, maybe I played it because I was enjoying the events they were doing around it. I just don't have faith in Nintendo to do that, because that's worth the money to me. Like, if they package their history and present that to me in a way, I'm okay with it disappearing, because I tend to not go back and play those games anyway. Like, libraries don't mean as much to me these days.
Right.
But I feel like instead we're going to get, like, you know, some, you know, Rise of the Robots. And then that's just gone the next month.
What if you get Rise of the Robots and a documentary about Rise of the
Robots?
Yeah,
I'm fine with that.
That would be all right.
It's a little better.
Sure. But that's my pitch for what I would pay a monthly fee for and be happy with.
You picked a good angle to pitch me on. I think that's a pretty damn good pitch for why I shouldn't be bummed about that. The other one for me too is just like, the in general, why should you pay for this service? Is like, because we've seen what not paying for it looks like with Nintendo.
Yeah.
And maybe this will be the incentive and the resources necessary to actually do an online service better. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not forgiving them their past sins necessarily, but it does take some expertise to build an online network.
Oh, wait, side note, can I please butt in? Do you want to know how voice chat works on the Nintendo Switch?
No.
How does Patrick have?
You have to download download an app for your phone.
No.
What?
No.
What does that even mean?
No.
Yeah. What?
Do you talk into your phone?
Online lobby and voice chat.
Call your friend.
Our new dedicated smart device app will connect to Nintendo Switch and let you invite friends to play online, set play appointments, which is cool. Those are neat things. And chat with friends during online matches and compatible games, all from your smart device. Also, a limited free version of this app will be available for download in summer 2017, suggesting that app will then cost money.
Wow.
In December? So not in time for Splatoon?
Well, I'm assuming this the chat stuff will launch. It's saying summer. My guess is this is all time to Splatoon.
Here's the thing. The funny thing is that the second you started talking about this, my internet started degrading, and that's how bad it was. That's how bad this is that my internet is falling apart.
Yep. In some ways, it's clever. In other ways, in most ways, it's the worst.
Yeah.
I like holding it.
Zelda looks awesome.
Yep.
I enjoyed playing Samurai Swords with Austin. New Donk City.
New Donk City.
I think that might do it for our Switch Spectacular. We'll come back, obviously, in 7 weeks or so to talk about how that is. Like, what the Switch actually ends up being like. How many weeks is it really? Let's figure it out. 20th, 27th, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 weeks away. Yeah.
It's coming soon.
That's so soon.
It's real soon.
That's so soon.
The idea that I'm going to be playing that March 2016 brings Mass Effect Andromeda and
March just got
Zelda
busy.
Breath of the Wild. I mean, and also that's also the bonus part about Zelda coming as early as it does in March. I conceive of like the
might actually beat
I was
it
like
for game of the
I
year
I was legitimately
time.
Worried that those games were going to overlap in a way that because those don't seem like games are like. Tonight I'm gonna play Zelda, and like then Tuesday I'll drop into Mass Effect. Like those are just games that consume you.
I just wanna,
for 2 weeks.
Can I just zip forward to let's go to the end of February?
Yep.
Okay. Zip in here.
Sure.
February.
No. Hold on. Switch.
Thank you. Switch to February 28th. Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh.
Torment.
So you're saying we have 4 days to finish Horizon Zero Dawn?
Oh, uh huh. Then
during GDC week,
Then on the third, the Switch releases with Zelda and all of your other favorite games, Skylanders, Imaginators, 1-2 Switch, Just Dance 27, you know, the whole nine.
Yeah, the whole crew. Yeah.
So that's the third, March 3rd. Then 4 days after that, Near Automata and Tom Clancy Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Okay.
Then a week after that, Star Trek Bridge Crew, which I'm actually excited about.
Yeah, that actually looks rad.
Then
is
the
that
21st.
A VR game?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, that's the VR like Bridge Crew game. I'm stoked about
that. Okay, all right.
And then a week after that is Mass Effect Andromeda.
Oh my god.
That month.
Oh,
isn't
that Torment. That game comes out too.
Yeah, as I say, Torment's the same day as Horizon. Yeah. So there's a lot. And then Outcast is a different thing. Not Outlast. Outcast might come. There's a sequel to Outcast? What is happening?
Oh, yeah, there is a sequel to Outcast.
Huh.
Weird. Okay. That's cool.
Mass Effect
that's coming.
Andromeda.
Andonkada?
Somebody said that in here.
I'm Austin Walker.
We gotta stop.
This is over.
Trip.
You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. You can find every single thing that Waypoint does over at waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com, bazinga.zone, waypoint.zone. I tried to get zone.zone. Yeah. Somebody else has zone.zone already. It's already taken. You also go to twitter.com/waypoint, youtube.com/waypointvice. We're uploading more and more of our streams to youtube.com/waypointvice. You can find us on Waypoint Vice pretty much everywhere else on the internet. Patrick, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me in New Donk City for one.
Oh. Fuck.
But you can find me on Twitter at for Patrick Klubik. You can find me on Facebook at P Klubik. But really in New Donk City. I'll see you there.
See you in New Donk City. Danielle, coming to us live from Donklin.
I'm here. Donklin, born and raised right here. Donklin Kong country. You can find me, Danielle R.I., on Twitter. And Danielle Rando, writer. On Facebook.
That's good. That's that's
I'm
us
still
for
saying
now.
It, you know.
I hope everybody has a really good weekend. I hope you have Monday off for Martin Luther King Day. We do, which is why we're going to pre-record that podcast. Look for that in your feeds like normal on next Monday. I don't think there's anything else big coming up. So for now, I just want you to sit back, relax, and rest. Peace.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.